from Toronto, Canada, home of igloos, polar bears, and flying hockey pucks, this is Inside Movies and TV.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Inside Movies and TV. I am Aaron Shaw. This is show number 59. Sitting across from me again is Jamie, and sitting to the side of him is Dennis.
Hey now.
Hi, everybody.
How's it going?
Good, and happy Mother's Day to the mothers. It'll be a belated Mother's Day
yes.
by the time this is posted, but this is the time we're recording. It's Mother's Day afternoon, and I treated my mom to breakfast. And have you called your mom?
I called my mom. She lives a couple provinces away. She lives quite far away and in a different time zone, actually. So I think she might have been off for a Mother's Day brunch, perhaps. I'll try her again a little later. And I also called my grandmother and my cousin, who's also a mom, and sent messages to all those folks in my life that are mothers and
yeah.
made sure that they got the appropriate wishes from me. it's a beautiful day here in Toronto, so I think a lot of folks are outside and enjoying the good weather we have here today.
Yeah. Has anybody called you, Dennis? Any of your youngins?
We don't have children.
Oh, I didn't actually know that. I think I might have known that. But
so Karen called her mother, and it was a beautiful morning for it. Nice and sunny, and the lusty month of May. Here we are.
Yeah, I know. In the month of May, summer is around the corner. Movies are making money, which we'll get into in a little bit. We've got a jam-packed full show that's got a good mix of movies and television news. We've got a lot of TV going as networks are gearing up for their upfronts in the next couple of weeks. We mainly have an NBC story who already did their upfronts. But I think we'll just dive right into this and start up with the number one movie this weekend, which I don't think anybody is surprised about.
Yeah, no big surprise at all. As we mentioned last week, May is a huge month for the summer movie season, and we've got the second of several big action movies coming up this summer. Star Trek, the complete reboot, revamp, directed by J.J. Abrams, who can't seem to do any wrong these days. Started off, of course, with that little romantic drama, Felicity, and then did Alias, Lost, and then started with getting into movies with movies like Mission Impossible 3, and producing of Cloverfield, and now Star Trek. It grossed $76.5 million in domestic box office this past weekend. This would also include some, I wouldn't call them advanced screenings, but they did start showing the movie on Thursday night for early and late shows on Thursday, as well as IMAX screenings as well. The total gross includes $4 million for those Thursday night shows. It came on the upper end of its $65, $75 million expectations that the movie industry thought it would do. All but guarantees that Paramount will pursue the next installment. All the cast are signed on for three-picture deals is what is usually the case when movies like this are made. X-Men Origins Wolverine, which was won number one last weekend by a landslide, fell a steep 68%. That's even more than I thought. Into its second weekend, earning $27 million. But taking in a 10-day domestic gross of $129.6 million, that's a lot of money. Star Trek led another weekend at the domestic box office with revenues running as much as 22% over the same weekend last year with Speed Racer. This time last year. What a big disappointment. I didn't even know if that was a disappointment. I don't know if people had high expectations for Speed Racer. Official numbers will be released later this week, but these are pretty accurate estimates. Last week, Wolverine was said to have taken in $87 million, but was later changed to $85 million, still keeping it as the movie with the highest premiere of the year. One other thing I wanted to point out is that Star Trek is on IMAX screens, and it made just over $8 million in IMAX, making it the biggest opening weekend for an IMAX movie, beating out last year's The Dark Knight. So, Aaron, we've all seen Star Trek.
Have you seen it, Dennis? Did you? Awesome.
Well, Aaron, what were your thoughts on Star Trek?
I'm going to say what I said in Facebook. I like this. I was clever with this. My little message on Facebook is, why didn't they make this Star Trek movie a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away? Wait a minute. Wait. I'm getting it confused with something else, aren't I? This movie rocked. I'm yelling into my mic. Sorry about the crackles there. This movie was everything I could expect it to be. I didn't think I'd love Bones as much as I loved Bones. He was awesome. You know, J.J. Abrams did what you could do with this. This was a franchise that was struggling, that had never reached its full potential in the movie industry.
It was bloated too.
Yeah, it was, and what J.J. Abrams did was someone who was, when he took on the Star Trek project shortly after Mission Impossible 3, he had no clue what Star, and he wasn't really familiar with Star Trek, but they were relying on him. Paramount was relying on him to do a reboot of the franchise. A very tall order to fill, because Star Trek fans are harder to please than Star Wars fans, as far as I'm concerned, being friends with people who are from both camps. As I felt this movie would bridge the gap between the Trekkies or Trekkers and the Star Warians. I don't know what you'd call yourselves.
Star Trek fans are so hardcore that they actually have names for themselves, and they get insulted when you call them Trekkies. Trekkers. Those are the ones that they were concerned about. Star Wars fans are just Star Wars fans.
So what J.J. Abrams did, what I'm trying to get to, is he did what you can do. He paid homage to the original. He put in just enough to please the fans while making it their own. The actors did the same for the characters. They put in enough of what we've known, made it their own, and J.J. Abrams literally, almost physically, tore down every dimension of Star Trek by his plot, his little story about time traveling, and is just basically the other 10 movies no longer exist. Everything that happened in those 10 movies never could exist. Hell, William Shatner could be in Star Trek 2, because now, officially, he's not dead, because J.J. Abrams completely dissected it, made anything possible. People that we love could get killed off. And, he just made it his own universe. Enough said.
I think it's interesting what you said about the struggle between Star Trek fans and Star Wars, because the special effects for this movie, of course, was done by Industrial Light and Magic, which, of course, was born as a result of Star Wars. So it's kind of a melding of the two genre, or the two tentpole
rivals.
Yeah. Series. And I want to come back to a minute for the opening weekend of Star Trek. It's interesting that Wolverine took an $85 million to still have the highest of the year, and it was more than Star Trek's gross, because let's go back to the leak on the internet of Wolverine, and it goes to show you that going viral, it was probably one of the best marketing moves to help Wolverine reach that figure, because, of course, Star Trek, nobody had the advance that they did with Wolverine. So,
yeah, the thing with Wolverine versus Star Trek as well, as far as the box office is concerned, although we didn't have real numbers, but you'd mentioned, Aaron, around 3,500 screens for Star Trek?
Trek opened in 3,500.
Well,
Wolverine,
4,099. So there's certainly a difference there.
And they have, like, the same... like running time, they're built both under 2 hours. Like,
yeah,
Wolverine's an hour 47. Star Trek's like about 10 minutes longer.
Star Trek's 127.
The same demographic.
Same demographic too. Yeah, I did expect a drop off. I didn't expect like 68%.
Oh, I expect. I did.
I was really hoping that it was going to beat Wolverine's opening weekend box office, but it didn't. So you know what? I think it's going to have longevity. I think that it's going to have repeat business. I think that people are going to go see it. I've seen it twice already, and the weekend's not even over. I don't think I'll see Wolverine again, although I have seen it a couple times online.
Mm-hmm.
I agree wholeheartedly with what you said about the reboot. The critics, for the most part, have been very, very kind to it. Not that it didn't deserve praise; it certainly does. One of them I read compared this reboot to the James Bond reboot with Casino Royale, where they really kind of started from the beginning of the character. They're starting with the beginning of Star Trek. They literally started with the maiden voyage of the USS Enterprise, the one that you see in the TV show,
mm-hmm.
with Captain Pike as the commanding officer of the Enterprise, who was originally in the pilot episode of the Star Trek show in the 60s, and they recast him with William Shatner. So you're right. They can go with a whole new...
anything.
A whole new timeline. You know, they used an alternate reality plot line. If they want to, though, they can still revisit some of the characters and places and situations that they did in the show, or they don't have to. They can do Khan if they want to, or they can ignore him. They could.
Vulcan's been destroyed.
Khan wasn't on Vulcan. Khan was on a planet where they... Well, Khan wasn't on a planet. He was on a ship.
Oh. I'm thinking they're going to go with the Klingon angle, though.
Yeah, well, that's just that Klingons... There were no Klingons in this movie, which is, you know, everybody knows...
Because at the time, Klingons and the Feds...
They're the number one rival, yeah.
They were the number one rivals.
The casting was great. The effects, like Dennis mentioned, were with Industrial Light and Magic. What hasn't been the first time that Industrial Light and Magic did the special effects for Star Trek, but I think it's the first time where they actually took it seriously. One of the reviews I read said that Star Trek movies were always treated almost like B-movies. They didn't get the big budgets that, say, Star Wars or other major action movies did. They were kind of treated as like the cousin of a big tentpole summer movie. And now they were actually taking a little seriously. From what I understand, too, the budgets for Wolverine and Star Trek were comparable, and yet you saw it a lot more on the screen with Star Trek than you did with Wolverine. I don't know where the money went for Wolverine. Probably
the Hugh Jackman's
pocket. Yeah, Dennis, you had something else you wanted to say about Star Trek.
Sure. It's an interesting bit of trivia, though, that Captain Pike, one of the major leads in Star Trek, is played by a Canadian, Bruce Greenwood.
Right.
And, of course, Wolverine, as a character, is a Canadian. So there were two for two in this summer's box office. And but I think Pike is going to remain a major character, and Bruce Greenwood has already admitted that, you know, he's signed up for the sequels. And something to look forward to.
Well, I looked on the Internet Movie Database last night because I wanted to find out a little bit more about Kurtzman and Oerke, the two writers for Star Trek and also writers for Lost and several other
J.J. Abrams Transformers. So much.
I think Transformers is one of the few projects that J.J. Abrams wasn't involved in. That they're a team. There's David Lindelof, I think is pronounced. He's the producing partner and contributed a lot to the script. They've already been signed, and pre-production or at least script writing ideas have already begun for the second Star Trek movie. And although they haven't announced a date, IMDb is saying 2011. Already for a new Star Trek movie. So
in 2 years.
In 2 years. That's a small window, to be honest. With a movie like the Star Wars movies, they always had a 3-year window and they barely made it. So 2 years for another Star Trek movie? I wonder if that's too soon. What do you think?
They did it for Transformers. They can do it for Star Wars.
That's true. They did do it for Transformers.
They did it for Spider-Man.
Is that really? Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 is 2 years. You have, overall, for the most part, it's 3 years, though. You're right.
Right, right. And, of course, another great thing, too, one thing that I love looking forward to is not only are you seeing these great summer action movies and comedies and family movies, but you get to see all the trailers for all the other movies that are coming out as well. We saw the new full-length trailer for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, the new full-length trailer for G.I. Joe. Of course, they show the Up trailer, which I will never get sick of.
That's such a great trailer.
You know, I'm looking forward to a lot of the films that are coming out. And speaking of Star Wars, Night at the Museum 2, Battle for the Smithsonian.
Looking forward to it.
It looks like it could be fun, the new Ben Stiller film, featuring Darth Vader, of all things.
You know what? I don't know if there's like a Darth Vader at the Smithsonian in some kind of set. I don't know.
I think there probably is.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
It'll be curious to see whether they use James Earl Jones
or maybe
dialogue.
It was just something they threw in the trailer.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, like, well, like with just... Ice Age, they have with that ice. They don't even have a trailer for Ice Age. They just have that thing chasing its acorn for the 5,000th time. But I don't think that's going
to
be.
So certainly, congratulations go to Paramount. They've been able to revise this dead and pretty much bloated franchise that was kind of caught in its own complexity, and they've been able to reset it with a new, fresh production and directing and writing team. And the cast was fantastic. They were also on Saturday Night Live this weekend, which was really kind of funny. And good luck to them all. They deserve every single bit of success. And every single dollar that they earn, I think, for this one, they really. And it. One final note I'm going to make is that this movie had a nice, upbeat, positive ending. It had a good feeling to it. You walked out of the theater feeling good, which kind of is in contrast to movies like Wolverine, Watchmen, Dark Knight, which I love, but they're pretty dark, they're pretty dreary, they're pretty, you know, apocalyptic in some ways.
That's another thing. And J.J. Abrams was saying, and many interviews I was reading leading up to this, was he's like, he saw The Dark Knight and he saw that you can do grim good, but why not do good good?
Yeah. Well, and they're calling one of the other rumors is this is a Star Trek for the Obama generation. Well, they started working on this 3 years ago before Obama even decided to run for president.
I'm not going to get into it, but there's so many things. The Star Trek series started during the JFK administration. Obama's the new JFK. America was at war with a million countries. America's at war with a million other countries. Star Trek was the thing that made you think of a brighter future. Star Trek, the movie, now is doing the same. There's all of these little things.
Coincidences, probably.
Anyways.
So, great for Star Trek, and now we're looking for... Now, next week is...
Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons. The
followed by...
Follow-up, not necessarily sequel, but I would call it... I guess the follow-up is the best way to call it.
Yeah, for movie
sake. Da Vinci Code with Tom Hanks. And the week after that, we've got Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale and directed by McGee, who has a name, actually, from what I read. And there's
a good article, actually, in McLean's this week about Terminator Salvation that's getting me more psyched for it.
If you're interested, by the way, just on a footnote for this just came out, I think, today or maybe late yesterday. The Apple trailer website has a four-minute-long trailer, a new one, for Terminator Salvation in glorious QuickTime, so you should check that out. All right, our next story, NBC is the first television network to do what they call their upfront, which is their big presentation for affiliates and sponsors and what they're going to plan for the upcoming fall television season. They've done theirs remarkably ahead of the other networks. The other networks are pretty much going to do theirs back-to-back, day after, I guess next week. But for now, NBC's done theirs. They've gotten ahead of the game and made some announcements as to what they're going to produce for new TV shows, what they're canceling, and what they're renewing. So, Aaron, why don't you fill us in on what NBC planned and what they told us about for their upfront.
Exactly. They were the first ones out of the gate, and they rolled out six new primetime series for the upcoming television season. In addition to this, these are six and on top of the new series called Parenthood, which is a family drama based on the Ron Howard film. And this show is also produced by Ron Howard. NBC is counting on the lineup of four new dramas and two comedies to rescue its low-rated primetime schedule. The president of NBC Primetime Entertainment, Angela Bromstead, said the current lineup that NBC has featured some of TV's highest quality shows, i.e. Kings, but acknowledged that the network needed some fresh breakout hits. So some of the shows, the six shows they unveiled were two medical dramas, one called Trauma and one called Mercy. Those are going to probably go head-to-head with House. It's their answer to House for Fox's medical drama. It's also their fill-in for ER, which ended its run just this last month. They announced the show Day One, which is a series that's set in the aftermath of a global catastrophe. And they unveiled two new comedies, one called 100 Questions, which centers on a single woman who agrees to take a 100-question compatibility test when she joins an online dating site. The other comedy is called Community, which is set in the fictitious Greendale Community College with a student body that's comprised of an odd mix of divorcees, high school flops, and other misfits. NBC took the wraps off of its show, as I said, 2 weeks before the other major networks, but they will not announce their precise schedule until May 19th. This includes the new shows and the returning shows, so we do not have any word on Chuck as of yet. NBC regularly trails CBS, Fox, and ABC in the primetime audience ratings. These ratings are what are used to help determine where the advertisers spend their money. Once the other major networks have announced their schedules, negotiations will begin with advertisers on roughly over $9 billion worth of commercial time. Because of the recession, ad dollars have dried up, which are creating a headache for the TV business, still trying to cope with the spread of digital video recorders, which allow viewers to fast-forward through these commercials.
Rogers On Demand, I'm sure.
Rogers On Demand, yep, here in Canada. So that's what NBC has for us. Some, you know, new shows. Nothing sticks out particularly except for Day One in my books. But... Yeah, May 19th is 2 weeks from now. They'll unveil what shows are coming back and what shows aren't, officially.
One thing that I wanted to point out, of course, is just as we reported last week, no word on Chuck, which seems to be the big question mark above everybody at NBC. They've got a couple of things going on that are interesting that they aren't doing that other networks aren't doing. And I don't think that they made a big deal about it because they've been announcing it for quite a while already. But the 10 o'clock Monday to Friday Jay Leno show, where they've now that ER is gone from their Thursday night lineup, they're kind of rethinking that whole weeknight 10 o'clock block, where a lot of a couple of the other networks, most notably ABC and CBS, have been programming that 10 o'clock block to be a strictly 1 hour drama category, where other networks, smaller channels and cable networks, have been having great success throwing in comedies, whether it be syndicated, where they throw in reruns of Family Guy or The Simpsons or what have you, or they've been putting different types of programming that isn't drama. Just because it's 10 o'clock and it's late at night doesn't mean you have to be serious all the time. And not only that, these shows are expensive to produce, especially when you had a show like ER where salaries for some of their larger stars kept going up and up every time they renegotiated their contracts. So instead, they've pretty much wiped out that whole week,
right?
Or, that whole time slot, and have inserted a Jay Leno show, which has yet to be kind of announced as to what they're going to do. I don't think it'll be a talk show like The Tonight Show. As everybody knows, Conan O'Brien takes over The Tonight Show, I believe, next month. But
how's Jimmy Fallon doing in Conan O'Brien's
Jimmy Fallon seems to be doing very, very well. He had some headlines this week just on Friday where the stars of Star Trek, Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto, were on his show, and it was just a big love fest. And they had actually expressed an interest in being on Saturday Night Live because it was a pretty poorly guarded secret that Jimmy Fallon was going to be on Saturday Night Live this weekend doing their Barry Gibb Top Show sketch, because Justin Timberlake was the show host, and that's just a funny ongoing sketch. But apparently the show's been funny. The show's been getting good ratings. I wish I was up late enough to watch it.
Right.
But
I've caught the Craig Ferguson from time. I don't watch late night.
Craig Ferguson's great, too. You know what? It's really it's turning into a nice new silver age for late night comedy, I think. You've got what Comedy Central's doing at night with The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. You've got much smaller ratings, but pretty popular from what I understand. Chelsea Lately in the U.S. And now we've got a nice lineup with Conan and Jimmy Kimmel and Craig Ferguson. And now Leno will be doing an earlier show, health permitting, of course. And it's going to be interesting the way that his ratings or his show, the Jay Leno unnamed show, will go up against what CBS and ABC are going to schedule in that.
They're probably going to call it the show formerly known as Tonight Show.
And we did report, I think, that the Boston NBC affiliate was not going to do the show and was going to do an early evening newscast. They've since backed off on that.
Yeah, I think we reported that. But I also wanted to say just one last thing. We do know one thing that NBC has done, and they have picked up Southland for another 13 episodes. I don't think we mentioned it last week on the last show.
That's
from John Wells, who wrote and produced ER.
Right.
Getting rave reviews and a good steady following.
All right, so the next story we have, of course, is the aforementioned Wolverine. We probably should have done that story right after Star Trek. I guess I never thought about it. With the success of the Wolverine movie, which is a spinoff of the X-Men movies, now we're going to have a spinoff of a spinoff, along with, of course, the expected sequel because of the money it took in. So 20th Century Fox and Seed Productions have announced they're going to start development on a sequel to, of course, X-Men Origins Wolverine. Seed Productions have already begun planning the sequel, which will focus on the samurai storyline originated in the comic book series. This is a great storyline. It's available as a graphic novel. It's written in, I believe it's written, I could be wrong, but the artwork is done by the very well-known Frank Miller, who is responsible for The Dark Knight Returns, Sin City, 300, and so on.
He's known.
He's very well-known. People know him. He's a kind of a big deal. The Japanese locale was teased about in the film's final credits.
One of them.
We didn't see that one, but it's a great storyline. Really fantastic storyline.
I'm looking
forward to seeing it.
You saw the other one. That's going to lead to the other thing.
a writer or director, I don't think, have yet to be announced, but Seed Productions will produce. And also, Fox has thrown into development a spinoff movie featuring Deadpool, the wisecracking mercenary played by X-Men Origins Wolverine star Ryan Reynolds. Reynolds is attached to repeat the character for what he's now simply being called Deadpool. Lauren Shuler, Donner, and Marvel Studios will act as producers. Deadpool is known as the mercenary with a mouth, a character that under Reynolds lived up to his billing in Wolverine until the end, when the movie deviated from the comic book persona, imbuing him with several superpowers and sewing his mouth shut. That's probably one of the sticking points for a lot of the hardcore comic book fans of what it did to the Deadpool character. It's understood that Reynolds will be regain the ability to mouth off, with the movie going back to the roots of the character, known for his slapstick tone and propensity to break the fourth wall. Fox is considering a Deadpool spinoff early in Wolverine's development process, which is why it cast Reynolds. The actor was brought back when Wolverine was leaked online to shoot one or two Easter egg scenes that appeared at the end credits. I don't think they really needed him back, Ed, because I don't think they really used Ryan Reynolds for the end.
I don't think they did, but
that would probably be a
he was there. Man. That was his hand, maybe.
The scene showed Deadpool alive, though, when last audiences saw him, spoiler alert, he appeared to be dead. Project looking for writers, of course. I just thought they might do this as a prequel. Like a Deadpool, like back when he was just, maybe, you know, still Ryan Reynolds and decent looking instead of
maybe
a freak.
Yeah.
The only concern I have about this is the concern that I think a lot of the fans have is that X-Men and Wolverine and all the characters associated with that whole deal aren't really controlled by Marvel Studios. This one and Spider-Man are controlled by the studios that they license them to. After they did those Spider-Man movies and they started with, what was the first one? Was it Ghost Rider or was it Iron Man? I think it was Iron Man. Yeah. Was the first independently produced Marvel comic book movie made by Marvel.
I think it was Iron Man.
Made by Marvel. And they had full control. They have very little control what Fox does with X-Men and the characters. And I don't think they have much control with what they do with Spider-Man, to be honest. I think they kind of sold it off. So that's why they were able to really just, you know, monkey around with the X-Men origin story, with the Wolverine origin story and with the Deadpool story, and fans don't like it. I've been reading forums and that sort of thing.
Right.
They don't like some of the changes are fine and subtle and maybe necessary for a movie, but they really screw with what they call the canon of everything. And that was, of course, one of the concerns they had with Star Trek, messing with canon, messing with, you know, dogma, gospel.
Which they did, but they did it right.
They did it successfully, yeah. Which you can do with time travel and all that nonsense.
Yeah, it's a little easier to do it in a universe where anything goes.
Yeah, and you know what? The trouble is that with the box office they earned, they can say, well, you know what?
We still went to see it.
You changed the story. You still saw it. You still gave us your money. So they don't really have a lot of motivation to they don't have a lot of motivation to stick with the source material. All right, Aaron, you've got a great story, which is kind of a...
All right. On the heels of reimagining and remaking, that's the big thing right now, particularly in all forms, including book lore. I don't even think that's a word. I just made it up. Word has come this week that Universal Pictures is developing a modern retelling of the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story for the big screen. Keanu Reeves is set to star in the movie, which is based on a script that will be written by Justin Haythe, who wrote the script for Revolutionary Road just this last year. Signed on to the project is Danish filmmaker Nicholas Winding Refn. So he's in negotiations to direct the project, which is simply being called Jekyll. The story of Jekyll and Hyde has been translated to the screen and stage dozens of times, but most recently was seen in 2007 when the BBC aired a miniseries that set the story in the present as Hyde ran amok in London. This is the first of a possible second or possible different adaptation of the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story that Universal has been working on, as they've also been developing a take on the story with Guillermo del Toro. But the two adaptations couldn't be more differently, as this one will be a modern retelling, so it'll take place in present times, I'd imagine. Del Toro's version would follow more closely to the novella written by Robert Louis Stevenson over 100 years ago. But that project has been put on the back burner as Del Toro has begun work on the Hobbit films, which are expected to take about 5 years to make.
Well, I'm really keen on this, actually. I like the whole Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story. And it was kind of interestingly approached in the Van Helsing movie that Stephen Sommers did with the aforementioned Hugh Jackman.
I hated Van Helsing.
Yeah, and you know what? It was just too much in crammed in one movie. But the opening kind of baddie at the very beginning was Mr. Hyde.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, as this big CGI looking ghoul. It wasn't quite convincing, but it was kind of neat.
And I mentioned book lore because we all know I'm excited about Sherlock Holmes. That's a reimagining.
Right.
A reimagining, but that's taking place in, you know, those days.
But it seems like, you know, they've attached some talent. They've got some pretty well-known filmmakers as far as writing, producing, and directing, that sort of thing. So I look forward to seeing what they come up with. I'm wondering if they're going to do it as a big-scale effects, you know, monster movie like they've done with like they did with Van Helsing. Certainly not that crazy, of course. Or are they going to do it as a more thoughtful piece that won't rely heavily on effects, but more maybe makeup or character or...
Well, based on the director's record he did a trilogy called the Pusher Trilogy, which was really graphic, very, very grotesque from what I've heard. And, you know, so they're probably going for gruesome, maybe.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. I can deal with that.
I look forward to one day seeing the trailer.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a great story regarding a couple of living acting legends, I would definitely call them.
I would.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right, Jamie. Robert Duvall and James Caan, those Godfather alumni, are reuniting to star in the post-apocalyptic thriller Tribes of October from director Philippe Martinez. Also in the cast is Ray Stevenson, Jamie King, and Stephen Moyer. October is set in a future in which, some future, in which New York has become surrounded by an endless desert, plagued by heat storms, and the city's technology is such that nothing made after 1960 works again. It looks like the 2000-year bug finally comes through, right?
Y2K, yeah.
In this environment, a detective, who's Stevenson, goes after a mafia don, surprise, surprise, James Caan, who in turn is going after the remnants of the NYPD, led by Duvall. And that's it. So over to you guys.
Yeah, the film marks the first time that Duvall and Caan have worked together since they did The Godfather. Really interesting story where they're going to have to... You see so many of these post-apocalyptic stories where they've got all kinds of high-tech technology like Terminator, where they're in, you know, 2018 and they've got, you know, robots running around. Well, they're going to have to rely on technology that was made prior to 1960. So what would that be? No cruise control? Is that what it's going to be? No cell phones. It'll be interesting to see what kind of take they work on this. I'm not familiar with Philippe Martinez.
Neither am I. This is a smaller independent film, it sounds like. It's going to be shot entirely with green screen, similar to the way it was done with Sky Captain and The World of Tomorrow. But yeah, post-apocalyptic seems to be a new thing that's coming up. I mean, we're going to see it already with Terminator Salvation. And there's another one. I'm trying to think there's another post-apocalyptic. Oh, it was. And that friggin' day one. That NBC is going to have next in the fall. So post-apocalyptic is kind of and there's somebody in my writing class that's doing a post-apocalyptic movie. So post-apocalyptic, go. Yay.
Well, Philippe Martinez certainly has been a prolific producer. But I'm looking at what he's done and I'm not recognizing a lot of it. I mean, he's got some interesting movies here. But I'm not recognizing a lot of the titles. So perhaps it's because he was a perhaps it's because he's a foreign language director? I'm not quite sure. I'll have to read up a little bit more about him. I'm looking at the mini biography here as I grind the podcast to a halt. Anyway, well, I'm looking forward to the movie simply because of the cast.
Harsh Times. He was a producer there, it looks like, on Harsh Times. That's
the Christian Bale movie, is that right?
That's Christian Bale.
All right. Interesting. All right, well, let's move on to some television.
Van
news.
Wilder 2, The Rise of Ty? Oh, God.
Really? His credits? Van Wilder 2?
He's executive producer.
It just means he put up the money. He just figured he knew a moneymaker when he saw it. Okay, so let's move on to some television news because there's a lot going on in TV. Not the least of which was what happened last night on Saturday Night Live, which I thought was the season finale, when in fact it's next week with Will Ferrell. Justin Timberlake made a huge impression on the studio audience and the viewing audience at large. Move over, Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, because he's joined the ranks of repeat hosts who always lift Saturday Night Live to a higher level of quality. He was all over the show last night, singing, acting, and everything from recurring sketches like the he was in drag as Peg. He perked up Kristen Wiig's Target store bit. He was in musical numbers. He played keyboards during Sierra's performance of Sex, Love, Magic. He revived some older characters like he and Jimmy Fallon popped up for a Barry Gibb talk show segment. But perhaps best of all, he and Andy Samberg did a Mother's Day themed sequel to their Dick in a Box digital short a couple Christmases ago. This one once again managed to make vulgarity witty as their dorky hipster characters hymned mothers they like to, well, you know. Well, this was one for the MILFs in the SNL audience, complete with cameos by Susan Sarandon and Patricia Clarkson. I was shocked to see Patricia Clarkson in this one. Also, the Weekend Update segment featured Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and Leonard Nimoy in amusing Star Trek plug. But the scene stealer was Fred Armisen's superbly tasteless New York governor, David Patterson, bumping into the scenery. He was stealing and making one-stop New Jersey jokes. As for Justin Timberlake, his energy and his good nature seemed boundless, whether he was crooning through the opening parody number about hosting or taking part in a sketch about Irish immigrants arriving at Ellis Island. His thick-brogued Cornelius Timberlake said, "I dream of a day when my great-great-grandson will be bringing sexy back." It was pretty darn funny. Certainly Timberlake brought the funny back to SNL. Did you watch it? What did you think of it? You can email us at moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about what Justin Timberlake did for Saturday Night Live this past weekend. One other story I wanted to touch on really quick. The Oprah Winfrey story. That has been all over the media lately. Oprah Winfrey fueled free chicken giveaway. It caused pandemonium this week at Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants all across the United States. Thank God not anywhere else. It was basically amended due to what the fast food chain was calling a quote-unquote overwhelming response. What really it meant is that they wanted to stop giving out free chicken.
Nah.
So in a nutshell, what happened was Oprah Winfrey had teamed up with, of all places, Kentucky Fried Chicken. I guess this must be a sign of the times as far as the economy is concerned. And promoted their new Kentucky Grilled Chicken product. And said if you go to Oprah.com, you can log on and download a coupon that you can take to any KFC and get a two-piece meal with two sides. Well, people did this and did it in droves. I think that KFC underestimated the power
Of Oprah's
audience and nearly crippled the company. Roger Eaton, who's the president of KFC in the United States, said restaurants won't no longer immediately redeem these free coupons for its new grilled chicken meal. He said the lines of customers wanting to redeem their coupons have been out the door and around the block, so they're unable to redeem these customer coupons at this time because they're running out of product that paying customers are going to want. Millions of Americans downloaded this free coupon from the Oprah website, driving traffic levels unseen of in the brand's 50-year history. Mr. Eaton apologized to customers for the changes to the scheme and said those who already had a coupon could get a rain check form to enable them to use it at a later date. The video's on YouTube.com if you want to Google KFC and Roger Eaton. Of course, Oprah is regarded as the most influential woman in U.S. television. And you know, she's driving popularity for things like books and pop culture and even politics. But now, you know, she's expanding it to fast food. And, I find it very curious that, you know, a company as big as KFC would not realize that maybe putting out free food on Oprah is going to drive traffic to the restaurants. I don't understand how they could have screwed up so badly.
I don't know. Oprah's very powerful. Everybody knows this.
I mean, they're talking about Oprah running for president someday. Why would they not think that, you know, a free fast food meal, who wouldn't want to do that? I'd want to do that.
She's number 78 on Times' most influential people.
I think that's probably a little low.
But here's the irony is that, you know, Oprah, I think it was last week, was doing a story in Kirstie Alley in her weight gain. So, and Oprah's always advocating diets, and here now she's helping her.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's not a fried chicken product. See, that's the thing. It's supposed to be a healthy KFC. It's Kentucky grilled chicken. So it's their chicken. It's marinated and grilled and blah, blah, blah. It's supposed to be better for you. So I think that's why she promoted it.
Yeah. And, you know, but it's okay that, you know, that's a misfire on KFC's part, but, you know, they're going to honor them eventually.
They better. They better.
I know there was a thing with Dr. Pepper and Guns N' Roses when Guns N' Roses were releasing their album that flopped in the spring and the fall. And it was like, oh, you can buy the album and go on to Dr. Pepper's website and you can get a free Dr. Pepper. And
oh,
Dr.
Yeah?
Pepper didn't live up to that.
Well, it's funny. When I was talking about this story just now, I had this horrible sense of deja vu, like we'd done a story like this before. And it just seemed very, very familiar. Well, yeah, there's a lot of that here. Yeah, that's a good point, Dennis. Sorry, I didn't have a mic there. But I get these things all the time where there's a website here in Canada called Red Flag Deals, and it's a message board where people post sales that they think are really good, specials and that sort of thing. And we have a burger chain here in Canada called Harvey's, and they launched an Angus burger, a mushroom burger, and they often post coupons to get a free burger. And many of the chain's restaurants don't honor the coupon, which is a pain in a lot of people's sides. But yeah, it's just a burger, not a whole meal. I think what they want to do is they want to drive traffic to their stores, and they'll get some money out of them if they buy fries or a drink or what have you. But it just boggles my mind that people would underestimate the drawing power in the audience of the Oprah Winfrey Show. All right, let's get on to a little more fun topic here. Aaron, you've got a story about a show that's not even on the air yet, and it's already getting a second season. I find this hard to believe.
And
too.
It's a spinoff.
It's a spinoff.
That's the word or the phrase of the week.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And it's from Fox, and it's the spinoff of Family Guy. Fox has ordered a second season of Cleveland, originally going to be called The Cleveland Show, but now just being called Cleveland. Family Guy spinoff. They ordered 13 more episodes, bringing the total of their first initial order of the show to 35 episodes. And this is months before the series is even premiered. The 13 extra episodes are targeted to premiere in the fall of 2010. For 2009, the 09-10 season is already going to be a full 22 episodes. They're already working on it, or they've practically completed it. The animated comedy is centered around the Family Guy character Cleveland Brown, and was originally targeted for a debut this spring. The network decided to push the launch to the fall to give the creative team more time for development and production, and now an additional 13 episodes. When they pushed Cleveland to premiere in the fall, that's when they ordered it from 13 episodes to 22 episodes, giving it its full season. This is what Fox did. This is how much of a sure thing Fox thinks Cleveland will be. I mean, they've got it's Family Guy. It's and the same guys who did American Dad. They had a sure thing with American Dad too. The move was made to keep the animated series. The move of pushing it to 2009 to this fall was made to keep the animated series in a continuous production and avoid shutting down and losing talent and crew. Cleveland hails from co-creators / executive producers of Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane, Rich Apple, and Mike Henry, who also voices the character of Cleveland. Also in the voice cast will include Seth MacFarlane, Santa Lathane, and Nia Long, as well as Arianna Huffington, who will be in a recurring role, something like Adam West in Family Guy and Patrick Stewart in American Dad.
It's a pretty remarkable story. I don't think it's quite unheard of, but it's pretty rare that a show would get a second season before the first show has even aired. The only thing that I can think of in recent history was Lucasfilm's Star Wars The Clone Wars. They had I think they had up to 100 episodes in the can before they even aired the first one. So I think when they were syndicating the show or airing the show, whatever network signed them to put it on had to agree to air all 100 episodes. that kind of thing. But to have
and it's not working too
well. It's
not working too well.
The show has, you know, the show dips and ebbs in quality, I think. And I'm a Star Wars fan, and I simply don't watch it. I think it's geared towards kids. Looking forward to the live-action show, and hopefully that'll be a little more adult. But
that's been in works for...
Yeah, I know they just started casting.
Another decade.
I know they're starting casting on the show. That's getting a little off topic, of course. But yeah, this is a remarkable story. I can understand why they're doing it, you know, as far as the talent is concerned, and you know, keeping everybody in line and keeping production costs low. But really a remarkable story. I guess they have a lot of faith in this Cleveland animated spinoff show. We've seen a couple of other shows air on Fox and other networks that are, I guess, what you call primetime animated shows that have had varying success. Sit Down, Shut Up's already canceled.
Good.
You know, really an odd show with a lot of talent that really didn't come through. Meanwhile, here in Canada, we have a Bob and Doug animated show based on the – this is going to sound so stereotypical – the Bob and Doug McKenzie characters that were pretty popular in the 80s from SCTV – made a big spinoff and a comedy album and so on and so forth. The animated show actually – and the movie, yeah.
And the movie.
The Strange Brew movie. They there's now an animated spinoff featuring the voice talents of Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas.
Oh, Dave Thomas and Dave Coulier. Rick Moranis.
Oh, and Dave Coulier.
Rick Moranis isn't in it.
He's not.
He's only
sure?
a producer. Yeah, he's only
oh,
a producer.
Oh, that's
Dave Coulier is Rick Moranis' voice.
Really?
Yeah, which, you know, but he's still...
It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell, but yeah.
And that show's actually pretty good. We caught a couple of episodes, and I quite like it. It's kind of funny, but it's definitely Canadian.
It's very Canadian.
Very Canadian. So, you know what? It's obviously, Seth MacFarlane has, you know, has a pedigree when it comes to Family Guy and American Dad. And I think that Fox is golden boy. He's the highest paid TV executive right now. He's got that great multimedia deal going on for online programming as well, which I haven't seen a lot of, actually. But looking forward to seeing this Cleveland show. It should be funny. It better be funny.
Cleveland's a funny guy.
Cleveland,
but they should have done a Tom Tucker and Diane Simmons show.
Of course, an Anchorman
before
style
they did
show.
Cleveland.
I know. Seth MacFarlane, are you listening? All right, we've got our final show for the podcast this week, and final story, sorry, for the podcast this week, regarding what a lot of the television network shows are going to do as far as the writing staff. It seems that there's going to be a lot more elbow room in the writing rooms on most primetime series next season. The cost-cutting crusade that has gripped the networks is hitting writers particularly hard because there's often more wiggle room in the number of writers working on a show than there is in other areas of a production. There's also a feeling among studios and network executives that there's fat to be trimmed and that writing staffs have ballooned beyond necessity. A good sign of that is if you take a look at even just late night talk shows, a huge writing staff, or if you watch some shows like The Simpsons or Family Guy, they'll show different writers, but they won't show all the writers. They kind of alternate shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the writer's room, for example, for The Simpsons, 12, 14 people maybe even. The survival of the fittest kind of drama is unfolding during the next few weeks as the networks make their new and recurring series pickup decisions on the cusp of their fall schedule unveilings during the week of May 18th, which is when the rest of the upfronts for the other networks are going to be happening. Industry sources say the studio is producing these things for the big four networks are pushing for cuts of as much as 10 to 15% in the writing budget for returning series, while new shows start off with smaller staffs to begin with than first-year shows in recent seasons, where shows had as many as 10 to 12 writers, not including the showrunners, of course. The new norm is going to be 6 to 8 writers. A good example here is NBC's police drama Southland, which we talked about earlier, has been picked up, has a total of 4 writers, including creator and executive producer Ann Binderman. That's partially because the show has only a 6-episode order on top of the pilot for its late mid-season debut last month. But even now that the Warner Brothers TV/John Wells production has been picked up for another season, it's unexpected to add too many more writers. Cuts are being made on shows across the primetime schedule, particularly on recurring dramas like CBS's Criminal Minds or Fox's show Bones. CBS, the conglomerate that has lost the most reliant on the mothership network as its profit engine, said that to be the most aggressive in scrutinizing budgets and writing staff on all of its shows, including the crown jewel CSI. So basically what that means is that CBS is responsible for producing a lot more of its own shows than the other networks, while the other networks will farm out their shows to other production companies, sometimes that are even competitors to their own, and then they'll just buy them from them. The new era of austerity for these networks began with the jolt to the network system caused by the writer's strike that we've been talking about for so many months, and has only accelerated as the economy went into a tailspin last fall. That inescapable 1-2 punch has made the creative people and their agents more understanding, however begrudgingly, the networks need to be hawkish on spending. Like so many areas of the U.S. Network force, TV writers in this economy are simply happy to have a job. So what do you think of what's going on here with writing staff?
I'm not surprised, but, I mean, we did, like, as we was just saying, there was the writer's strike, and we just went through that 100-day writer's strike where everybody realized the importance of writers on television shows, on movies, and now they're like, okay, you're back. Now you're cutting jobs, though. You know, it's to save money, and everybody's nickel and diming it right now because of this recession. In terms of how it will affect shows, time will only tell. But you know, also, you know, there isn't necessarily a need, I think, to have 12 people writing for like Smallville or Lost. I mean, I know these are big ensemble shows,
right?
And Southland is with what they've done with only four people. That's incredible.
Well, and you know what it is not necessarily that they're cutting people. Is that they're cutting the money that they're spending for the budget. So let's say a show's got, you know, $200,000 budget. They're going to cut those writers that are getting paid tens of thousands of dollars per episode. The more experienced writers that have been on for a while. Those guys are more vulnerable than say the middle or low end writers
right.
that have just begun because they're less expensive.
Exactly.
For a lot of high paid writers, it's going to be, you know, we're sorry, but we're letting you go. They can get, you know, probably similar quality out of the lower end writers that they've hired on for less money. You know, back in the day, shows didn't have nearly this many writers. And, you know, then there's all this trend about consulting producers where they use this consulting producer credit sometimes as a cherry on top of a writer's salary, and they're adding a little extra money. But, you know, back in the day, say, for example, one of the examples they list here is for the show I Love Lucy. Had two staff writers for the entire run of the show, 181 episodes, two writers.
Dick Van Dyke had Carl Reiner.
Yeah, see? Now you got shows. I mean, obviously, shows are much more in-depth, much more detail-oriented. There's much more research going into a lot of these procedural dramas like CSI.
Yeah.
They need people to do a lot of that research.
Right.
And so it takes more manpower and a few more people.
It goes with the fact that, you know, it's a tougher audience today than it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, you need realism. Absolutely. Dennis, what do you think about what's going on here?
I think it's only a matter of time. It's like any businesses that has to cut back. You're going to go for your high-priced talent. If it's one person earning a big salary, you can probably have three writers for the same salary. So they're the ones that are going to be, unless they're really golden and are consistently producing just excellent, off-the-charts work. I doubt that's the case. Because, you know, as you get older, you get, you know, too comfy and maybe you get burnt out a bit too. But like it's, you know, in the old days, you know, I Love Lucy, two writers, and Dick Van Dyke, one writer. You don't need 10 writers. Or you get, you know, somebody like Tina Fey comes along and you get a hit series out of her. And I'm sure her show doesn't have a lot of writers, but, you know, she would be the main one, obviously. So I think it's inevitable. I don't know if it's good or not. It depends on the talent that you have.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if any of these shows start dropping in quality. I tend to think that they might not. it's also the kind of thing where maybe they'll just simply renegotiate some of these contracts, just like in any other industry, the auto industry, the airline industry, what have you.
Auto industry.
They're getting, rather than maybe cut some of these writers, they publish a story like this and said, hey, you know what, we're going to have to cut some of these staff. And then these writers' agents will go back to the studio or back to the production company and say, okay, wait a minute, these guys don't want to lose their jobs. We're willing to work for a little bit less. We'll see. That should wrap things up for this episode of Inside Movies and TV, episode number 59.
Mom rules.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Aaron, for putting together the show notes and continuing to maintain the blog at moviesandtvcast.blogspot.com. Check it out on a regular basis. Aaron is fastidious in maintaining that blog and updating it with the latest news and information on what's going on in movies and television. Feel free to email your comments or even send us an MP3 audio comment. Our email address is moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. That's and spelled A-N-D. Thank you very much for listening. Check us out on iTunes if you haven't subscribed already. Also, you can listen to us live and streaming on both iTunes and on our own podcast website at imtv.podomatic.com.
Have a good one.
Pardon me?
Have a good one.
Have a good one. And we'll be back next week with more Inside Movies and TV.
What is a dog?
I forgot it's Mother's Day.
Didn't get a gift for her.
Other plans got in the way. She'll be so disappointed.
Damn, I forgot it too.
This could have been avoided.
What the hell are we gonna do? My mom's been so alone ever since my daddy left.
Cold.
No one to hold her tight. Life has put her to the test.
I know just what you mean. My mom's been so sad and gray.
Word.
My dad can't satisfy her in the bedroom ever since he passed away.
Hold up.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking I think it too.
Slow up. What time is it, dog?
It's time for a switcheroo.
We both love our moms. Women with grown women needs. I say we break them off. Show them how much they really mean. Cause
I'm a mother lover. You're a mother lover. We should fuck each other's mothers. Fuck each other's moms. I'm pushing that lady where you came out as a baby. Ain't no doubt this shit is crazy. Fucking each other's moms. Cause every mother's day needs a mother's night. And doing it is wrong, I don't wanna be right. I'm calling on you cause I can't do it myself. So be it like a brother, so be my mother lover.
I'll be laying in the cut waiting for your mom, pledging on this loop and roses.
I got my digital camera, I'ma make your mama do a million poses.
They will be so surprised.
We are so cool and thoughtful.
Can't wait to fuck your mom.
I'ma be the syrup, she could be my waffle.
Shout enough.
My mama loves bubble bath with chamomile.
Straight up. Give it to my mom, doggy style. This is the perfect plan for a perfect Mother's Day. They'll have to rename this one all up under the covers day. Cause
I'm a mother lover, you're a mother lover. We should fuck each other's mothers, fuck each other's moms. I'm pushing that leg where you came out as a baby. Ain't no doubt this shit is crazy. Fucking each other's moms.
Break it down. It would be my honor to be your new stepfather.
It would be my honor to be your new stepfather.
And while you're my mother, make me another brother.
Damn.
And while I'm in your mother, I'll never use a rubber.
Oh. Cause every mother's day needs a mother's night.
Yeah.
And doing it is wrong, I don't wanna be right. I'm calling on you cause I can't do it myself. So be it like a brother, so be my mother lover. They blessed us both with the gift of life. She brought you in this world, so I'ma sex her right. This is the second best idea that we've ever had. No choice can be no other. Be my mother lover.
Happy Mother's Day.